11. The token's GPS coordinates were set 37 miles from the research facility, which wouldn't have been much of an issue if there were roads. I wondered if this was what it felt like to traverse the surface of Mars in a dune buggy. It would be similar, with the exception that every direction was buried in ice and snow. I couldn't see any hint of vegetation as we drove inland away from the cove, and finally the ground leveled out, with fewer jutting ranges blocking the wind from buffeting the vehicle. I was in the passenger seat with Trip navigating the beast of a vehicle. The windshield stretched wide, giving us a good view as we drove across the snow-draped expanse. He went slowly, careful not to hit any rocks or jagged chunks of frozen earth. Ice formed along the corners of the glass, stretching like ghostly fingers trying to interlock.
"This thing could use some better suspension," Marcus complained from the back. He sat in the middle of the bench seat, not wearing a seatbelt.
"We're lucky no one took the keys, or we'd be screwed," I reminded him. The heater was on max, and still the windows were continually attempting to freeze up. We'd had some cold winters at home, but nothing had come remotely close to this. Marcus leaned forward, his head sticking between Trip and me.
"You really think Veronica's going to be able to land?"
"If anyone can do it, it's her. I've seen some daring flying before, but I think that woman may take the cake," Trip said. His praise for Veronica somehow made me proud, as if I had anything to do with her skills.
"She's downright crazy," Marcus muttered. "I thought we were goners coming to Antarctica."
The van jostled, and Trip threw on the brakes, sliding sideways in a fishtail, before he gave it a little gas and recovered. The entire area sloped heavily, and he went with the grain until it leveled again. I checked the GPS and asked him to adjust the trajectory slightly. "Trip, you have a unique perspective. Why did they choose to attack now?" I glanced at the man driving and he peered over, his brow set into a frown.
"Couple reasons. They do have one of the tokens, as Hunter suggests, and they want to complete the task. What better way than to wait and have us do their dirty work?"
"So they know what we've been up to and are anticipating our actions. Makes sense. If I wanted the tokens and had no information to go by, I'd do the same," I said, and something clicked. "It's just like what you did to me."
"I already apologized for that."
"Are you sure we can trust you, Trip?"
Marcus asked, addressing the elephant in the driver's seat.
"Or is it Hunter feeding them the info?"
"Don't worry. If you think this is me playing you guys, it isn't. I started this mission as a hired gun, but I've done work for Hunter in the past. I know full well he may be a little fanatical, but he's not stupid. He's as lucid as they come, and I've never seen him so worked up as I have these past 2 weeks. If you're asking if Hunter is legit, I'd put my money on it, if I still gambled."
"Why'd you stop?" I asked.
"I prefer a sure bet."
"Meaning that you wait until someone else determines the winner and
not like that. Hunter's a lot of things, but I don't think he's with the believers. If he was, why all the pretenses?"
"Good point," Marcus said. "It would have been much simpler to kill us, take the coordinates, and send his minions to gather them up."
I grabbed a bottle of water from the bag at my feet and drank, suddenly feeling a thirst I couldn't quench. I passed it on and sank into my seat. "Even if we gather these 5 tokens, what good does it do? We have the case, but not the final piece."
"Hunter will track it. He always gets what he wants,"
Trip grunted.
"He didn't 35 years ago when Dirk took the bridge without him," I reminded the ex-SEAL. "Sure, and that's driven him harder. Any idea why Dirk left his sugar daddy behind?"
Trip stared at me, his gloves gripping the steering wheel tightly.
"Not the slightest." "I bet someone convinced him Hunter was dangerous," Marcus said.
"Who?" Marcus shrugged and settled into his seat.
"Beats me."
"How much farther?"
Trip tapped the navigation screen, which was blank. I used my handheld and checked.
2 miles.
Wind shook the van again, and I gaped out the window to see a rocky blockade ahead.
"We'll have to go around." "Which direction?"
Trip started moving right, and I didn't stop him.
"I think this'll work."
The engine struggled at the incline, and we slid before the tires caught. Trip drove cautiously, and we finally rounded the rocky hills. He smiled and pushed the gas pedal as the landscape opened up. The sky was cyanic blue. Pure white wisps of clouds floated in gentle layers in front of the glowing sun.
It was peaceful, despite the harsh climate.
"I think we're in," Tripp stopped mid-sentence as the van tilted at a sharp angle and stopped with a loud clunk. He attempted to steer out, pressing the gas again, but the tires didn't catch. "Damn it, we're hung up."
None of us had seen the hole, which had been half covered by snowdrifts, catching the van. "This is just great," I said sarcastically. "We're half a mile from the token." I pointed to the window. The token seemed like it would be in the middle of an open field, flat and devoid of anything.
"As good a place to hide it as any. Nothing around here, no markers. Nobody would ever stumble upon it,"
Tripp mumbled.
"I have no idea how long we can make it out there before we freeze our asses off."
"Hunter set us up for the weather." I patted the jacket, insulated with the best goose down money could buy, along with the four layers underneath. My hat was wool, and I pulled it lower onto my forehead. My boots were lined and stiff, and I had on thermal socks underneath. Tripp fiddled with the fleece lining on his parka and flexed his fingers.
"It's going to be cold, and this wind is no joke. We stay together. I'll leave the car running. Veronica will be close."
Tripp started for the exit, and I grabbed his arm. "Hold up." I removed the radio from the console and tested it. "Veronica, come in. Hunter, do you read?" It crackled, and we sat in silence for an excruciating 10 seconds before I heard her voice.
"Rex, what's the ETA?"
"We ran into an issue with the vehicle, but we're a half mile from the objective. We're targeting it now," I informed her.
20 minutes?
Veronica asked after I didn't really give her a direct timeline.
"Normally I'd say yes, but make it 30.
I looked at Marcus, who was shoving the water bottle into his pack.
"Roger, how is the terrain?"
"Fine. But could be some hidden dangers, not to mention the ice. Might be tough."
Tripp snatched the radio from my hand.
"Veronica, Tripp here. Come in from the north. Wind is trouble, and that will give you the best cover and allow you to ride it, not fight it," he said.
"Roger."
And it was set. Marcus was the first one out, and I went next, instantly feeling the bite of the wind. I wrapped the scarf tighter and started forward. White flakes kicked up the moment I walked past the modified van, and Tripp was shouting curses as we strode in the direction of the token. Normally a half mile would take a couple of minutes at a jog, but we were walking into the wind with a foot and a half of snow around our boots. Each step was a struggle, but we went on, determined to find the token before Veronica arrived. I didn't expect it would be straightforward to land or take off from these plains, but I kept my worry to myself. Marcus was the fastest of us, trudging through the elements like he'd done this a million times. Once again, I was impressed by his resilience and determination. The last token. It was challenging to believe we'd only learned of those coordinates a few weeks ago, and here we were seeking our last one. I continued on, my eyes aching under the goggles. I squinted, almost keeping them closed, and tried to think about Beverly and Fred at home with the kids, warm in our childhood home, with the Christmas tree lights on and the smell of a turkey baking in the oven. Then I remembered hearing about Haja and Hassim and the fire at Brian Hardy's condo in New York, as well as Castro's place. I'd been so stupid. If the believers knew about me, they were definitely aware of my sister. I'd left her alone and vulnerable without a second thought. I needed to warn her, to tell her to get to somewhere safe. Was it Christmas Day or was that tomorrow? With the constant sunlight and the relentless traveling, I'd lost track of time.
How much farther?
Tripp pulled me closer, his voice dying in the wind. I pulled out the GPS device, but it fell to the snow. I plunged my glove in after it, wiping the flakes off the screen, finding it dark.
It's broken.
Marcus had stopped farther ahead, hands on his hips as he waited, and Tripp plucked the tool from me. He rotated it, checking the underside, and hit it against his palm. The lights returned, and I could tell he smiled by the crinkling of skin around his eyes. He shoved it to me, and I signaled ahead.
Almost there. Marcus, 100 yards that way.
I returned it to my pocket and continued to think about Bev and her family. If anything happened to them, what about Marcus's parents in Florida? How deep would these believers cut to obtain what they were after? Marcus ran as the sound of the plane's engines echoed over the field of ice. We'd risen in elevation slightly, and the snow thinned, making the walk easier. Veronica and Hunter had arrived, and that meant we needed to hurry. I imagined our pursuers were close, and I fully expected the cultists to be armed and prepared to leave our frozen corpses in the middle of nowhere, Antarctica. I stopped to check the GPS, and it was as accurate a location as we had. It's here. Somewhere. The ground was rocky, with ice chunks settled between any raised earth, and I spotted the bag sticking up from the shallow ice. I got it! The plane flew low, the sound loud as I kneeled at the piece of burlap reaching for the sky. It was stuck, but Marcus already had something pulled from his pack. It was a slim pickaxe, one he'd found hanging in the garage. I took it, hacking at the frozen ground, trying to avoid the rocks as best I could.
Rex? Tripp's voice was distant, and I glanced at him. We have a problem.
Not the words you wanted to hear in a situation like this. My entire body was cold, the horrific weather creeping past the protection of my many layers. I shifted on my knees and kept chipping away with the handheld tool.
Rex, I said we have a problem.
He loomed over me and I stared a short distance north where Veronica was landing. The plane kicked up clouds of snow as it skidded to the ground.
What is it?
I finally asked. Tripp had his M4A1 out, his eye pressed to the scope.
Hurry! That's not Veronica.
I understood what he meant when I saw the shape of the plane and the fact that it was far larger than ours, with a different logo on the side. This wasn't our friends. It was the Believers coming to steal the tokens. I scrambled with the pick, my heart beating so hard I barely heard the pair of them shouting at me.
Faster!
Marcus yelled. He had a gun in his grip, his huge mitten dangling from a string on his jacket. I worked the ice and tugged at the sack with my other hand, banging tirelessly until I could pull it free. At some point I must have torn the bag with the sharp edge and the token slipped out, falling to the rocks. I grabbed it without looking and shoved it away safely beside the other four. We'd done the work, and now the cult was here to claim the prizes. I hated them with a passion, this group of devotees who claimed to await the unknown's arrival. They'd lurked in the shadows for decades, watching, waiting. But none of that mattered today. The Believers were here, and they wanted what I had resting inside my jacket, and they would stop at nothing to return to their sovereign with the tokens. But the case was with Hunter and Veronica on the plane, and I took a minor bit of solace in that.
There are three of them, Tripp told us. Even from this far, I could spot their dark outlines against the white backdrop. Can't recognize them with their ski masks on, but they're armed.
What do we do?
Marcus's voice shook. Their plane began to roll over the snow-covered ground, turning before halting. This meant the pilot was still on the vessel, making four of them.
Three against four, I can handle those odds, Tripp said. Time to hustle.
It was too cold to be exposed for much longer, and I noticed that he was heading for the van. I really had no clue what a military-trained killer like Tripp Davis would do in this scenario, but I never in a million years expected him to run. We trailed after him as he dashed across the field. My lungs burned with the cold, each breath growing more and more painful. Marcus had slowed down too, his eyelashes caked in ice. Air escaped the mouth hole of his balaclava in a haze, and I nodded, trying to send him nonverbal support. When I saw our abandoned vehicle again, still billowing exhaust from the tailpipe, I realized Tripp did indeed have a plan. Not that I doubted him. The others were probably 5 minutes behind us, and I was grateful for the respite.
Climb inside, Tripp said. You have 2 minutes to warm up.
I didn't hesitate, opening the rear door for Marcus. I shoved in beside him and remembered we had a radio. It was toasty inside, and I unwrapped my scarf and lowered the protective neck shielding from my jacket.
Veronica, the Believers are here. They found us. We're at the van.
I paused, hearing something outside. Tripp was fiddling with the gas cap. It was Hunter's voice that carried through the speaker.
Did you retrieve the token?
That was the only thing that mattered to him. I have it.
We're going to land. You'll need the backup,
Veronica said, and I heard Hunter protesting beside her. I shoved the radio into my parka and Tripp knocked on the window.
Time's up.
Marcus stared at me with fear painted on his face.
What the hell, Rex?
He still had the gun in his hand.
I can't do this.
Sure you can. You remember what I taught you at the range? I hated using the cliche, but it was all that came to mind as I exited the vehicle.
It's us or them. I'm not dying today.
I took the other P226 and dropped my mitten, gripping the metal tight with the insulated glove underneath. Tripp splashed a bottle of liquid across the vehicle, and I smelled the gasoline as we approached the cover of the ridge we'd driven around a half hour ago. Where he'd sourced a tube to start the siphoning remained a mystery.
We pressed our backs to the cold rock, and Trip chuckled as the three believers entered our line of sight. They moved like soldiers, cautiously resting their semi-automatics on their chests as they checked out the vehicle. They were close enough that I could hear their voices but not make out the words. I stared at the trio wearing matching black jackets, possibly obscuring Kevlar vests. Their faces were indistinguishable with dark masks, but they looked confident as the lead soldier opened the driver's door and turned the vehicle off. Trip grunted, aiming his rifle toward the group.
"Ready?"
he asked.
"For what?"
Marcus asked.
"When it blows, we hit them. Got it?"
"Not really," I murmured.
"Follow my lead. Point and shoot. They won't expect this to work."
Trip began firing, but not at the soldiers. The bullets struck the side of the modified van, and the men tried to dash away. One of them slipped, falling a few feet from the vehicle. Trip's plan didn't seem to work, and I noticed the cultist relax slightly as he growled a laugh in defiance. My ally fired again, and the tank exploded. The concussion was so loud, rushing toward us with the wind, and I barely saw Trip leave our side. The nearest man was on the ground, unmoving, and Trip fired at the other two. I joined him, trying not to stumble on the rocky ground as I held the gun up, crossing the open space. His assault rifle barked out bullets, and I fired at the man on the right, seeing Trip's target was the adjacent soldier. I missed the first three shots, and it gave my target enough time to return fire. I ducked, sliding on the snow as I fell. Trip was still running, and I rolled around, taking aim again. I was facing the man 30 yards away, and he was a much bigger bullseye than me. His fire shot the ground a yard in front of me in a burst, and I stopped pulling the trigger, hoping he thought he'd hit me. I glanced to see Trip's target fall to the ground, a red spray misting the snow around him.
"Drop it," Trip called.
The guy who'd just been trying to kill me spun to face Trip, and he snarled a remark I couldn't hear.
"I said, drop it."
Another plane's engines roared from above, and I took a second to peer at the sky. It was Hunter and Veronica. Marcus arrived behind me, holding the gun, as I'd taught him.
"You okay?"
he asked.
"I'm fine."
Trip was still yelling, but the man was unrelenting. Trip jogged in the opposite direction, leaving us in the open. I took aim at the man's chest, trying to compensate for the wind and distance, but really, it was dumb luck that made the second tap of the trigger strike home. The man's gun went off as his other hand flung to his neck. Marcus screamed as an errant bullet hit him, and I jumped to my feet, knocking my friend to the ground. The firing ceased, and I peeked to see the believer drop his gun. Blood soaked his hand as he pressed it to his collar. Trip was on him, kicking the weapon away and kneeling at the guy's shoulders. He shook the man as he interrogated him, but the man's chin lolled to the side. He was dead. Marcus was hit, his leg bleeding at the thigh, and I wrapped my arm under his, helping him stay upright. He muttered and swore a few times, his thick layers of clothing blocking my view of the wound.
"He shot me!"
Marcus shrieked and laughed, a hair-raising cackle.
"You're going to be fine, Marcus. Look, Veronica landed."
I pointed to the plane directing toward us. In all the excitement, I'd forgotten about the pilot of the other plane. I grabbed for my radio and tried to use it. Nothing. Then I spotted the hole in my pocket and inhaled the scent of burning electronics.
"He shot me too."
Saved by a radio. I dropped it. "Trip, we need to warn them. There's still another..." The gunshot rang out loudly, causing us all to spin around. The van still burned, and the cultist we'd assumed had been killed in the initial explosion was on his feet, stalking us with an assault rifle raised. I quickly stole a glance at our airplane and saw the figure creeping up behind it.
"Veronica!"
I called, but they were too far away, the wind coming from the opposite direction.
"Drop your weapons,"
the man near us said gruffly. He was limping, and a section of his jacket was singed. Despite the circumstances, my body was telling me I couldn't last in this cold for much longer. My breaths were labored, my feet and fingers numb. My friends didn't look any better than I felt.
"Why would we do that?"
Trip asked.
"We can all leave here alive,"
the guy said, and I thought his voice sounded recognizable.
"My companion will be bringing your friends over, and we'll make this trade."
I saw Veronica and Hunter being ordered out of their plane by the fourth believer and hoped our pilot wouldn't do anything rash. These guys meant business, and we'd already killed two of their allies. The fact that I'd shot and killed a man didn't quite register in my brain. I was too cold, too concerned for my friends.
"We're not giving you the tokens," I told him.
He hobbled closer, his gun unwavering in his grip.
I think you are.
We stood in a stalemate as Hunter Madison and Veronica arrived a few minutes later. She offered me an apologetic glance, but Hunter's eyes were wild as he surveyed the damage. Our gazes locked for an instant, and he finally spoke.
You can have the tokens,
Hunter said. The two remaining cult members went to stand near one another with Hunter and Veronica still under the gun.
Good. Then we'll let you live.
I struggled to recall the voice. Hunter seemed to clue in. He turned to face the man and slapped his own palms on his thighs.
Francois! How dare you betray me?
And it all suddenly made sense. The fact that the believers always seemed to know where we were, or perhaps where we'd been. Francois must have been in contact with Hunter, and he was working for the believers.
You're surprised? I never was much of an actor.
Francois peeled his mask off. His normally slicked dark hair was messy and clotted with sweat, despite the freezing cold.
20 years. You've worked for me for 2 damned decades, and now you're screwing me over,
Hunter muttered.
Did they pay you off?
Francois laughed loudly.
You think I've been bribed? I've been with them this entire time. Did you trust the believers would let you escape and not keep tabs on you? They knew this day would come, that your obsession would lead them to the bridge.
Even if you take the tokens, you won't have the bridge, Hunter said. You don't know the location, not to mention the 6th token.
Francois's composure fractured for a moment, but he regained it.
That is all irrelevant, Hunter. You see, we only need to prevent you from accessing the bridge. The unknowns cannot be stopped, not with the bridge sealed. But you were never a believer, not in your heart. You were more interested in the theory of aliens than in our unknowns. Tell me I'm wrong.
Hunter obliged and shook his head.
That's your downfall. If you really understood what was about to happen, you'd have spent your life devoted to attuning and preparing for their return. The seas will boil, the people chosen for servitude, the skies will rain fire, and you, Hunter, will miss out on all of it.
Francois lifted his gun and fired at Hunter. The old billionaire was killed instantly. My breath caught, and Veronica screamed, a curt noise to match the ferocity of the freezing wind.
Sorry, I couldn't let him live. Orders from the top.
Francois actually smiled, and my stomach twisted at the sight. The believer behind Veronica shoved her forward, and she almost stumbled on Hunter's dead body. Tripp took the opportunity as the enemy soldier lowered his guard to catch her. Tripp shot him between the eyes. Veronica fell to the ground, and Francois roared. The servant angled his rifle up, aiming at Tripp as a report sounded from beside me. Francois was calm, peaceful even, before toppling over face first into the snow. Marcus let the gun fall from his hand, his eyes barely visible through his frozen lashes.
Hunter!
Veronica was at the old man's side, rolling him onto his back. I ran to them while Tripp ensured the others were indeed dead. Marcus didn't move.
Veronica, he's gone.
I tried to pull her away, but she reached into his jacket, her gloves wrapped around a chain, and she tore it free.
He told me to take this if anything happened to him. I can't believe he's gone,
she cried, tears instantly freezing under her eyes. Come on, we have to reach the plane. I helped her up and took one last look at Hunter Madison. He'd been so excited for this adventure. He'd spent decades searching for the bridge, and my father had abandoned him all that time ago. He'd beaten cancer once, but the illness had a way of returning with a vengeance. He didn't deserve to go out like this. No one did.
Rex, give me a hand with them.
Tripp had started dragging the dead cult members toward the fire of the burning vehicle.
Why?
Burn the evidence. We don't want anyone to know we were here, he said as he dragged Francois through the snow, leaving a streak of pale pink behind him.
Veronica, help Marcus on board. We'll be right there. She stood holding a small thumb drive on the golden chain and stared at it. I put my hand on her shoulder and pointed to the waiting airplane. She nodded, and they took off, stumbling for the warmth of the idle plane. Tripp and I did our best to haul the bodies into the fire, and at last we hovered over Hunter.
What about him?
I asked. Tripp rubbed his nose with his parka sleeve.
I don't know.
I hate to be insensitive, but we can't take him home with us. We're going to have enough questions as it is.
I couldn't bring myself to burn him. So we lifted him away from the bloodshed and covered him as best we could.
Tripp started away, muttering under his breath as he clutched his weapon to his chest, and I knelt next to Hunter. He was just a mound of flakes, but I spoke out loud.
I'm sorry this was your fate, Hunter. I know what this means to you.
I will find the bridge, mark my word. I'll finish what you started, I promise you. Your life work won't be wasted by these bastards.
My toes ached, a dull throbbing in the bones of my feet, and every extremity burned with cold. It was time to leave the South Pole behind. I slowly rose and moved as quickly as I could for the waiting airplane. We had the case and 5 tokens, but it felt like we were missing far too much to continue.